Today with Claire Byrne on RTÉ Radio 1, sponsored by Sullis. Retrofitting and sustainability are the future of construction. Visit sullis.ie/greenskills to find your course.
Brian, thank you very much. Now, one man is on the front and back pages of every newspaper today. That'll give you a flavour of the celebrations that have been happening, most of them championing Messi, champion del mundo, world champion. I'm joined on the line by James Montague, Middle East football expert and author of When Friday Comes, Football Revolution in the Middle East and the Road to Qatar. James, thanks for joining us again on the programme. We've spoken to you a couple of times during the World Cup. You were live on air with us the moment Saudi Arabia scored in their win against Argentina. Do you remember in their first game of the tournament? Well, I mean, did you think back then that we'd be here today?
I did not. That feels like a lifetime ago.
It does.
Now. It didn't seem like Argentina were destined for the final. I mean, I know people have kind of willed Messi as you know, the GOAT, the greatest of all time, to get this, and the narrative around it has been a little bit, you know, a bit too much at times, you know, because France would have been worthy winners, Mbappe would have been a worthy person to have taken that crown, I think, as well. But it was an astonishing final, and I think probably the best final I can remember in my lifetime, I think, because they're often quite disappointing, aren't they, the finals?
Yeah, and it looked as though it might be disappointing up to the 79th, 80th minute, and then suddenly it became this thing. I mean, it just grew legs after that, and I think most people are in agreement that it is the best World Cup final ever. Do you think?
I think it's got to be considered that, because there's so much pressure on these occasions. And I mean, obviously at the elite sporting level, it's performance at these levels, at these moments, which, you know, become iconic and are what make you a champion. And I don't think you can get a more high pressure event than Messi in his last World Cup, his entire legacy on the line, scoring two goals, scoring the winning goal. You know, I mean, it's an amazing story. And so it'd have to be a very, very good World Cup to top that, to be honest, a World Cup final.
Is he the greatest footballer of all time?
I think, I mean, obviously everything is subjective. I mean, you can look at Maradona, of course, would be considered that. I mean, one of the things I was writing about in When Friday Comes was, because I met Pelé and Maradona when they were there at the opening of the Aspire Academy in Qatar back in 2005, where really this journey to Qatar hosting this World Cup kind of begins. And, you know, they've been arguing about it for 25 years, about who was the greatest of all time. And, you know, FIFA really wanted Pelé to be considered the greatest of all time because he was he was a bit more of a poster boy. And of course, Maradona had his well-publicized problems of drug addiction, and they much preferred Pelé to be the greatest of all time. But I think when you consider what Messi has done in the club game and this cherry on the cake, I think certainly the argument about whether him or Ronaldo were the greatest of his generation, I think that question is probably answered. But I think we're still going to be arguing long into the night and into the year about who really is the greatest of all time.
So you think the debate is over? The Messi Cristiano Ronaldo debate is over today?
I think it was already over, but this is definitely evidence that it's over for good. It will still be. It's one of those things that if you ever venture into the online space on Twitter or Instagram, it's like every argument about football by the third or fourth comment kind of ends up being about Messi versus Ronaldo. Mm-hmm. So this is something that probably isn't going to end. But I think this is that is the crown, isn't it? That's to win the World Cup. Ronaldo probably will never experience that now. He's probably too old. And, you know, currently doesn't even have a club, you know, a domestic club. So I think I would say that's been answered, but it probably won't stop people arguing about it.
It won't. And you know what? Our text number is 51551, and the Ronaldo fans will be onto us. You know they will, saying yeah, that he still has something left. Some raised eyebrows then about this cloak that was draped over Messi when he went to raise the cup, this robe that Well, he wasn't asked to wear, it was put on him. What was that about?
Well, the bisht is kind of this black gold trimmed robe. It's a fantastic honour for especially a head of state in a Gulf country to put that on you. And it's considered a kind of cloak that you give to an honored guest, a warrior. And so, you know, I thought it was quite a sweet moment, to be honest. I know that some people have complained that it obscured this iconic jersey and it obscured the badge in this moment of victory. But, you know, as much as this is Messi and Argentina's World Cup, I mean, this is Qatar's World Cup as well. I mean, they paid enough for it. They paid, you know, $250 billion, which is more than I think all of the other World Cups cost put together. And it's, you know, in a way, everything they've done in the past 12 years to get it, to maintain it, all the capital they spent, all the political capital they spent, was about this moment, which was Messi with Sheikh, with Tamim, the Emir of Qatar, and Infantino, to have that photo moment of him there in that bish is what it was about, having that iconic moment.
For them, but for football fans, it wasn't about that. For football fans, they want to see Messi in his jersey without wearing this robe. I mean, it didn't mean anything to people outside of Qatar or people who understood that gesture. Again, it was about Qatar bringing it back to them, bringing it back to their investment in this and taking ownership of it.
Yeah, but at the same time, I mean, you know, he does take it off and there is that almost, you know, it's almost a recreation of Maradona winning the, you know, holding aloft the World Cup in 1986, where he's not wearing it. But I think, you know, we have to say, there's been a lot of criticism. You know, I've been on your show criticizing the Qatar World Cup, and there are many, many things to criticize it for. But one of the things that, I mean, having written When Friday Comes, one of the things I always wanted to kind of get out of writing that book was to show that, you know, there is an Arab, Muslim, Middle Eastern, Persian, Israeli, you know, all of these areas put together. But there is a football culture in that region that is unique. And this had a unique flavor in that respect, in terms of it being a Middle Eastern World Cup. And this was just one element of it that I thought was actually quite a nice touch. You know, this was, you know, this is our country. This is something, this is an honor for us. And it was, and it's asked so many questions. And it's, you know, what is that? What are they doing? What's the history behind it? What's the religious and political and cultural significance of it? And it did give it that final Middle Eastern flourish, I think. And I don't see any problem with him doing that at all.
And what do you think the legacy of this World Cup will be for Qatar? Because really, a lot of this was about promotion for that country, about putting it on the map. We, you know, everyone knows where Qatar is now and what Qatar stands for. What do you think the gain is for them? Is there one?
I think we have to wait and see. I mean, look, the moment last night, I don't think it will be topped. The tournament, if we take it purely just on an organizational level, was a resounding success. It was a fabulous World Cup in terms of on the pitch. Nothing went particularly wrong. I mean, there was always issues of whether, would it be, for instance, would there be a terrorist attack? Would there be any, what would be the security issues around the tournament? A lot of time was spent talking about that. This was a fabulous World Cup on that metric. Whether the effects of it are going to be long term, I suspect they will be, but it's going to be a question that we're going to have to look back on, I think, in a month from now, in a year from now, in 10 years from now. And I think that they ultimately, Qatar's position in the world has fundamentally changed. And also the criticism of this World Cup is very different from Western eyes than it is from the rest of the world. We are in the minority by looking at this in a negative way. The majority of the world has seen this as an exhibition of power, wealth, and of Middle Eastern culture, and see it very positively.
And you, James, I know we're looking at the conditions of the migrant workers, and you tried to get access, didn't you, to one of the camps where they lived. You couldn't get access, is that right?
Well, most of the camps that I had visited over the past, reporting over the past years, were impossible to get into because police cars had been placed there. So, you know, you'd be arrested the moment you stepped in. I did manage to get access to one of the camps, which was about, essentially, it was where the kind of the security workers at FIFA security workers were. And it was thousands of men living in these conditions. And I managed to speak to some men, and the conditions were abysmal where they were living. There was one guy showed me the picture of his room, which essentially had a massive pile of sand in the middle of the room because I hadn't finished constructing it. And all the men were living in bunk beds around it, 12 to a room. Their conditions were terrible. Their wages were terrible. They were being given erroneous charges by their employers to keep their wages down. You know, turn up 1 minute late and you lose half your day's wage, that kind of thing. You know, these men were being exploited and there seemed to be no, you know, recourse for them. And one of the narratives around this World Cup and about the change within worker rights has been, well, there's been a reform process. And there has, on paper, been a reform process, kafala being abolished, this system of guardianship that allows this exploitation to take place. But when I actually got into the nitty-gritty with the workers I met, and many of the workers I'd kept in touch with over the years had been sent back before this World Cup had begun, obviously because they didn't want the workers, you know, but it almost like an embarrassment for the organisers. But, you know, when I've spoken to the men and what they told me about their conditions today, they weren't that different to, you know, when I first started visiting the camps in 2005 and 2006. So I think it's been a massive lost opportunity that would, you know, that could have really, if you talk about legacy of international tournaments, which is something that the IOC and FIFA love to talk about, having a humane migration policy that doesn't treat people like second, third, fourth class citizens in the Gulf, and that would have spread throughout the Gulf, would have been a fabulous legacy, but they've blown it. And I suspect when I go back in 6 months' time, that very little, even it might be even worse. I don't think it's going to be changing for the better.
Yeah, and I read a piece this morning that suggested that once the attention of the world moves on, that things will just more than likely revert back to what they were before. James, thank you so much for taking our call. James Montague there, and a reminder that James's book is called When Friday Comes, Football Revolution in the Middle East and the Road to Qatar. Back after this.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.